What good is a fantasy basketball podcast without Sergio Gonzalez?
It could still be very good.
No, no.
Especially the one I heard last week. That was very, very good.
Last Thursday was rough. That was rough for me. I had to do that solo with the help of a very sick Sergio Gonzalez giving me some notes before the show. But you're back. You're feeling better?
I feel a lot better.
Good, good. You sound a lot better. You sounded like a cartoon character last week. Would have been funny to have you on, but probably would have gotten a little old, a little fast. I don't know if you would have been able to survive. But here we are with the fantasy basketball update on Monday, December 27th. Hope everybody had a great Christmas or holiday or whatever you want to call it these days.
If
you
Happy Festivus.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to send us an email, it's dmfantasyhoops@cbs.com. Send it along. Or you can tweet Sergio. Follow him on Twitter. At CBS Gonzalez, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z. Follow us at CBS Fantasy News on Twitter. Today on the show, we're going to look at some surging players, some slumping players, and Sergio will give you advice on what to do with these guys. Look at the top four most traded players in CBSSports.com leagues, and start right now with some news and notes and mostly injuries. The Kings. The Kings are horrible, so they're going to shuffle their starting lineup around. They have a new starting lineup, which they'll be throwing out there. Bane Udoh, Tyreek Evans in the backcourt, Francisco Garcia, Carl Landry, Samuel D'Alembert. Who benefits, who loses, and does it even matter?
Well, I think the thing that fantasy owners should pay attention to here is that the Kings have had, I believe they lead the league in lineup changes to this state. And Paul Westphal, who's actually starting to come into a little bit of heat there, is trying to figure out the best way to save his job at this point. I think Carl Landry is probably the player that benefits the most here. He is a player who can average around 17 points and 7 rebounds per game. Given the playing time and now as a starter again, I think he can get back close to that. Bane Udoh is another player who I think, given the playing time, can be a guard that you can trust as, in some cases, as good as a low-end number two, definitely a high-end number three, given what he can offer across the board. He's a decent scorer, an above-average scorer for a guard, for a point guard, a good distributor. He can get you around 6 or 7 assists per game, and he can also give you around 3 rebounds per game. The problem with him is inconsistency. A lot of that has to do with the way he's used and the inconsistent rotations that we've become accustomed to in Sacramento. But whenever he's starting, whenever he's getting run, he's one of those players that fantasy owners should take advantage of. So out of these lineup changes, I think Bane Udoh, I think Carl Landry benefits, also Sammy D'Alembert. But that might be short-lived because the reason he's in the starting lineup is because DeMarcus Cousins is in the doghouse. He made a silly choke gesture in a game against the Golden State Warriors. The Kings were ahead at that point. They ended up losing that game. So obviously, DeMarcus Cousins, who's had his professionalism questioned already by Paul Westphal, is in the doghouse. We don't know how long it's going to take for him to get out of it, but eventually, rest assured, especially with Westphal's job on the line, DeMarcus Cousins is going to be back in there. Take advantage of Sammy D'Alembert in short-term weekly formats this week, but don't get too attached to him. I think Udrich and Landry, you can probably expect more from long-term.
Mike Miller, the Heat were excited about his return, but so far he's done just absolutely nothing. He has 1 point so far coming back from the injury, and the Heat are going to work him back slowly.
Yes.
So what can we expect from him?
Yeah, I think we could expect more of the same in the short term, probably through the end of, not the end of January, but through mid-January. We're probably going to see him play no more than around 15 to 20 minutes per game. Listen, he missed pretty much the entire preseason. He missed all the regular season. He's got some catching up to do in terms of conditioning. The Miami Heat are notorious for their physical conditioning regimens and requirements before they allow players to play big minutes in their rotation. We're going to eventually see Mike Miller be the player that the Heat brought him in to be, and that's their perimeter outside threat to stretch opposing defenses. And he's going to get probably more looks from beyond the arc than he's ever gotten at any point in his career. I still think he can be highly valuable, especially in category leagues, because I think he can at some point give you around 2 to 3 for sure, 3-pointers per game.
Andrea Bargnani, injured and not making the trip. This little road trip that the Raptors are going on right now, which means there could be some good Toronto players that are sitting there and you can go ahead and pick them up, maybe get a little bit of run out of them while Bargnani is sidelined. Now, how bad of an injury is this?
Well, it's bad enough that he's definitely not going to play on Monday night. probably not going to play until the weekend at the earliest. He's been dealing with it for the last week and a half. He actually, in his last five games, he hasn't played back-to-back games once. He's tried to come back from it, had to sit out a game, tried to come back from it, had to sit out another game. So expect the Raptors to play it cautiously this time and make sure that when he does come back, it's for good. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he doesn't play at all during Fantasy Week 10. I think the players that could benefit here are Amir Johnson up front. He's dealing with an injury himself, so he's a little bit banged up. The player that we've seen take off the most recently in Toronto is actually Linus Klaza, who got a chance to step in with Sonny Weems hurt. Weems is also still hurt, and with Bargnani banged up, we've actually seen Linus Klaza not only pick it up in terms of scoring, but also average around 9 rebounds per game over the last 3 contests. I think he's definitely the player that's going to benefit the most.
He is our number 2 most added player in CBSSports.com leagues. Rajon Rondo, when will he be back?
Rondo doesn't know. The Celtics don't know. It's a day-to-day thing, but what we're seeing is that the Celtics are going to play extremely cautious here, and kind of like what we just discussed about Bargnani, his coming back too early. They're definitely not going to have that happen with Rondo. He's not going to be back in there until they're 100% sure that he's going to not suffer any setbacks with the injury. I wouldn't be surprised to see him miss another maybe a couple games this week. So I think he will play at some point this week. So if you're trying to take a chance on him in an average-based league where maybe him playing one game will get you by this week, I think you could take a chance on him. Still risky in those formats, but in a weekly cumulative format, I'm definitely sitting him.
Vince Carter. Now, last time I spoke, when you were sick, I mentioned that Vince Carter, if he's going to have the knee surgery, it's going to be a month-long thing. If he doesn't have the knee surgery, he'll be back much sooner, and we like him in Phoenix getting a boost from what he was doing in Orlando. So
absolutely.
What's the latest with the knee?
Well, the good news is that he's decided not to have the surgery, so he's not going to miss a month, which is what the arthroscopic knee surgery would have sidelined him for. The bad news is that he's still out indefinitely. It's not exactly sure if he's going to be back within the next couple games or so. He might still end up missing another week or so. The earliest reports I have of him coming back are later this week, sometime in the weekend. He's still yet to make his debut for the Phoenix Suns. But like you said, and you were absolutely right in last week's podcast, him playing and playing through this injury, when that does happen, the fact that he's in Phoenix's high-volume offense is going to benefit his stagnating fantasy appeal. I think this is a great move for his fantasy value in the long term, but you're going to have to be patient for at least the next week or so.
Finally, on the injury report, Andrus Biedrins. What is his situation? He's got a foot injury.
Yeah, he's out indefinitely. He is not in the probable lineup for Monday night's game. I would expect him to miss at least another couple games. I believe he's missed the last 4. I think Biedrins is a player you definitely have to reserve this week. He's worth stashing because he can get you around 10 rebounds per game, maybe a couple blocks on a consistent basis. His upside is that of around the 10-point-per-game score. They haven't been asking him to produce much offensively, so he's become more of a Sammy Dallenberg type in that he's good for category leagues, in that he gets you boards and blocks, but don't expect much scoring.
All right, let's have fun here. Pick 3 Western Conference point guards for the All-Star team.
3? Who? Well, I don't think you can go with Tyreke Evans anymore. I would say Russell Westbrook.
Okay.
Chris Paul.
Uh-huh. You got Darren Williams. You've got Steve Nash.
You've got
Monte Ellis.
I think Steve Nash gets the boot. I think Darren Williams. If we're just going to be
What about Monte Ellis? You could put him in as a shooting guard?
But you could put Monte Ellis in as a shooting guard.
Okay.
I would put Darren Williams, Russell Westbrook interchangeable as the top 2 point guards in the Western Conference right now. Chris Paul, just because of who he is and the fact that he's still putting up excellent numbers, I think he gets the nod as the number 3. I think guys like Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, sorry, I know that in reality, though, the fact that they are who they are politically, we've seen in All-Star games, is that they still get the nod over the young guys.
Mm-hmm.
One of the young guys is going to get screwed. I think it probably would be Darren Williams.
Think so?
I think he gets the boot because Russell Westbrook has done so much this year.
Yeah.
Well, with that said, Darren Williams has a little bit of seniority.
Yeah, they might all go.
Yeah, they might all go, but it's going to be tough. That's a very interesting question because let's see yours.
Point guards are so
good.
My top 3?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if Monte Ellis is going to be a shooting guard,
yes,
we'll take him out. It is the same 3 as you.
Well, give me the order.
Okay, give you the order?
Yeah.
I'm a huge Chris Paul fan.
Absolutely.
Huge Chris Paul fan, but this year I have to go with Deron Williams.
Deron Williams won.
Deron Williams won, Chris Paul 2, Russell Westbrook 3.
Yeah, I think I would actually go Russell Westbrook 1. I think what he's done to this point has been phenomenal.
It's very close.
Deron Williams, a close second. And listen, if I was actually starting a team right now, I'd take Deron Williams first. And then Chris Paul. The fact that Chris Paul is behind these two guys right now in all these scenarios is phenomenal.
My thing with Westbrook, I'm not sure that they are at their best when he is scoring as much as he's scoring.
Sure.
That's what I'm not convinced about. I know that he's been scoring a lot, but I also know that it's kind of come at the expense of guys like James Harden, who's had a pretty down year, starting to pick it up a little bit now.
Right.
But the Thunder, even though Westbrook is having this breakout year, up until maybe a week and a half ago, they were actually kind of having a down year.
They're underperforming.
That's why I thought maybe Westbrook was scoring a little bit too much. Maybe they'd be better off if he had been trying to distribute a little bit more.
Right.
Which you can never make that complaint about Chris Paul.
No.
Chris Paul is the ultimate distributor.
Absolutely. He plays within himself. He definitely knows what he needs to do to make other people better. And I think Deron Williams is actually very good at that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Westbrook will figure it out.
Yes.
Get a little bit better at that. So here are some guys who are slumping, and then I'll give you some guys who are surging. You tell me what you think about these guys. Jason Richardson is owned in 98% of leagues, started in 58%. Since the trade, so far, not so good. He hasn't scored more than 15 points with the Magic. Not getting the crunch time minutes lately either.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a bad move for him fantasy-wise, for him and for Gilbert Arenas. I think the fact that they're sharing time with Jameer Nelson, Arenas, and Jason Richardson is going to water down their numbers. It's definitely not going to be a good thing for him, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as he's been. I think once he finds his footing there and once he carves out a niche for himself, he's going to see around 13 shots per game, and his numbers are going to increase. He's not going to be as good as he was in his heyday, but he could still be highly valuable in fantasy leagues.
Roy Hibbert, owned in all leagues, maybe starting to pick it up again. Double-digit scoring 4 of his last 5 games. But this is a guy who started out great and tailed off a little bit. Is he coming back?
A little bit. I think this is to be expected of such a young big man. We heard Coach Jim O'Brien try to explain away his problems. He said that, listen, in a span of, I believe it was a week and a half, he played against some of the best centers in the NBA, and he was pretty much schooled in those games. This is still a learning process for really a center who's getting his first chance to be a regular everyday center. I think he's going to get better.
Mike Conley owned in 99% of leagues. The assists are still good for Conley, but the threes, the points, the steals, pretty much everything else is down. So is he going to be able to pick it back up to where he was in the early part of the season, let's say in November, or is this what we're looking at for the rest of the year?
Well, I think we're seeing a little bit of a market correction in that O.J. Mayo struggled earlier this year because Mike Conley took on a bigger offensive role. Now I think we're seeing the opposite. With O.J. Mayo starting to get back into the rhythm offensively, we're seeing Conley take a step back. I think eventually we're going to see a comfort zone between the two players where they're each going to cut into each other's stats a little bit, but not to the point where one player completely erases the other. So I think for now, Conley owners should be patient. He may never get back to the numbers he had earlier this season, but I think he's still going to be a lot better than what he is right now. Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of around 14 points per game, 6 assists, and maybe around 3 or 4 rebounds per game, which I think is still solid in a lot of formats.
All right, let's say you wanted to trade him. Conley or who would you rather have? Conley or Darren Collison?
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I would, at this point right now, I'd rather have Conley because I think he's more well-rounded. I think what we're going to see from Collison this year is what he's done to this point, which is around 14 points per game and 5 or 6 assists. I don't think he's going to get you as much across the board as Conley can.
Conley or Calderon?
In a category league, definitely Calderon, because I think Calderon can get you around 9 or 10 assists per game.
He is dropping dimes lately.
He is dropping dimes. That's what he did. And I hopefully you remember from earlier in the podcast, he was a player that we were telling people to buy low on. Given the playing time, he's one of those players that, like, given the playing time, this is what he does. He is a high assist per minute player, and now he's getting the playing time. Jared Bayless is not going to cut into his production at all. I think Calderon is definitely the player to have.
What's wrong with Taj Gibson? He's not even starting over Kurt Thomas. He is owned in 72% of leagues, but only being started in 19% of leagues, and he figured to get a boost with Noah's injury.
Yeah, well, he suffered a concussion late last week. That kind of put a damper into things. He was the starter until that point. Then he came back from the concussion. Initially, they thought it was just a minor thing. He ended up having to miss a couple games. Even when he did play, he was playing kind of restricted minutes. He's still kind of suffering the effects of being restricted because of the concussion. Not because it's still bothering him, but because we're seeing such restrictions placed on players with head injuries now in sports and professional sports that he's being monitored closely. I think once they are more comfortable with where he is, we're going to see Taj Gibson get the boost that we anticipated when Noah was out. Kurt Thomas, I think he might be 55 years old. I don't think he's going to be
39. He's the second oldest player in the league.
Behind Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely not going to be asked to do much on a long-term basis. I think eventually Taj Gibson is going to see the boost that we anticipate.
Two guys who are in their starting lineups for their teams, but not really delivering. Maybe there's some potential with these youngsters. Xavier Henry, owned in 5% of leagues, started in 1%. Starting shooting guard, and most starting shooting guards are owned in more than 5% of leagues. And then there's Jody Meeks, who is starting for the Sixers, 16% of leagues in fantasy in CBSSports.com fantasy leagues, only being started in 5%. Owned in 16, being started in 5%. He's hit 3 three-pointers total in his last 5 games. So, you know, that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to hit outside shots.
That's what he's there for.
But he did score 17 points on Sunday, first time in double digits in his last 6 games. So, Meeks and Xavier Henry, they're available in almost every league. Are these guys maybe going to pick it up and be worth a flyer?
I like Meeks more than I like Henry. The reason I don't like Henry is because we mentioned O.J. Mayo starting to pick things up a little bit, and I think eventually, if he doesn't become the starter, he's definitely going to take the full starter's minutes at shooting guard for the Memphis Grizzlies. I think Jody Meeks has more potential for playing time. Like you mentioned, he's an excellent three-point shooter. He hasn't shown it lately, but he is going to pick it up on that end, and he can be more beneficial to you in a category league. Neither one of them is a great option, but I think of the two, I'd rather have Meeks.
He seems like a bit of a sleeper to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think when I was watching Sixers Celtics a few weeks ago on TNT, I remember the broadcaster saying that Doug Collins said this is their only true shooting guard.
Yes. Well, that's because he has some combo guards in Lou Williams
right.
And the other guys over there. They have a lot of combo guards. And like you said, yeah, he's the only guy that is just a pure shooter, jump shooter, especially from beyond the arc. There's definitely a role for him there. How big the role might be is still to be debated, but if he starts hitting three-pointers, I think he's absolutely a definite sleeper in category leagues.
Meeks or James Jones?
Meeks, because I think with Mike Miller
right.
eventually stepping in there, I think it's definitely Meeks who has a long-term appeal.
So those are the guys who are slumping. Let's take a look at the surging players.
Mm-hmm.
Ty Lawson, owned in 65% of leagues, started in 27. Lately, he's been getting over 30 minutes a night, even when Carmelo Anthony has been there. They will play him and Billups on the floor at the same time. And I've been watching him a lot lately, and I've always liked him ever since last year. I was very high on him. I thought he was an underrated rookie. I don't know how you feel about him, but this is a guy who could get you 17 points, a few rebounds, 6 or 7 assists. I think he's a really good player.
Absolutely. I think the only problem with him and the reason I think he's sometimes overrated in fantasy is he projects to be a much player than what he is in reality in fantasy. Because when Chauncey Billups is healthy, when Carmelo Anthony is healthy, his playing time is going to be inconsistent and it's going to lead to inconsistent production. The thing that gets fantasy owners up in arms about him is that occasionally he will put up the type of stat line that he is capable of putting up on a consistent basis, but then reality sets in, the minutes aren't there for him consistently for him to put up numbers of anything more than a number 4 guard. I think he's probably one of the better young point guards in the league in terms of talent, but until his playing time is there consistently, he won't be anything more than a spot starter in fantasy.
All right, Jared Dudley, our most added player on CBSSports.com. Number 2 is Linus Klaza. Who would you rather have?
Ooh, of the two. I'd rather have Linus Klaza right now. I think Sonny Weems being banged up and Andrea Bargnani being out definitely makes Klaza a more appealing option, but Dudley's right there. He's getting a chance to start with Vince Carter out indefinitely, like we mentioned earlier. He dropped, I believe, 33 points the other night and 27 points the night before that. He has upside. He's a premier three-point shooter. I think he has definite value in the long term.
How about Gary Neal? You like him?
I do like Gary Neal, but unfortunately, I think his potential for production is coming to an end because with George Hill back in the lineup, I think eventually we're going to see Hill cut into Neal's playing time. We haven't seen it yet, but I think over the course of the next week or two, Hill is a player that had carved out a niche for himself. He's a well-rounded guard behind Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, who can do the combo role guard thing for them. I think eventually we're going to see a split role between the two players that's going to actually potentially cut into George Hill's long-term fantasy appeal. As long as both players are healthy, neither player is going to be great in fantasy.
Couple of veterans who are relevant again. They're under the surging section just because for them, this is surging. Actually playing. Tracy McGrady and Josh Howard. Now, McGrady's only owned in 15% of leagues, but he's been getting about 25 minutes per night over his last five games. And then Josh Howard is owned in 62% of leagues, which I thought was interesting because I don't really see much of an upside with him. I don't know that he's that good anymore. But he's played in the last four games, 23 minutes a night, getting a steal per game. It's been decent so far. McGrady and Josh Howard, what do you think?
I actually like Howard a little bit more than McGrady. I think McGrady has, at this stage in his career, done in the last few games what he's capable of doing. I think his knees are shot. He's not capable of playing long minutes in any particular game. And he's definitely not going to play back-to-back games or two or three games at a time more than 25 minutes per game. I think you're going to see him restricted. If he plays 25 minutes one night, put it this way, the next night he's probably going to play 15 minutes. So,
right.
Tracy McGrady, especially in that rotation where even players like Rip Hamilton and Ben Gordon are finding it hard to be consistent, Tracy McGrady's not going to step in and be consistent. He's definitely not a player I think that fantasy owners should pick up off the waiver wire. Josh Howard, on the other end, he's just a couple of years removed from having a very good season with the Dallas Mavericks where it seemed like his career was on the rise. A lot of things have happened since then, a lot of injuries, some off-the-court trouble. But Howard, while he's not going to get back to the player he was in Dallas, can get you the numbers that we've been seeing in the last few games. The playing time is there for him in Washington. I think he's got something to prove with the Washington Wizards, and the Wizards have something in that they want to figure out what kind of player they have going forward. Everything for the Washington Wizards at this point is building towards a future. They want to know if Howard can be part of that future.
Moving on. We want to look at the most traded list on CBSSports.com. Number one on this list is Brook Lopez. So I'll give you a few trades that have recently gone down involving Brook Lopez. You tell me who wins. Brook Lopez for Andrew Bogut.
I would definitely say Brook Lopez. I know Lopez is down. He's not getting along with Coach Avery Johnson, but he's the better projected center for the rest of the season, if that makes any sense. Bogut is close. He's not quite there, and he's also injury-prone. So of the two, I'd rather have Lopez.
Brook Lopez and Paul Millsap for Chris Paul and Thaddeus Young.
Ooh, we talked about Chris Paul.
Who wins
Paul.
This trade?
I definitely want the Chris Paul side of things here. I think Chris Paul is definitely a much better fantasy option than Lopez, obviously. Millsap for Young is the tough side of things.
Yeah, I mean, you're giving up. Obviously, you're getting Thaddeus Young. It's kind of a throw-in, but you're getting the best player.
Yeah, and I think in situations like that, wherever you can get a Chris Paul, who's a top three-point guard, as we mentioned earlier, you definitely have to do that for a struggling young center who may not get. If this is a keeper league, it's tougher to get rid of Brook Lopez. But I'm taking Chris Paul. I'm taking Chris Paul.
And this is the right time to be selling Paul Millsap, mm-hmm. as we've been saying.
Yep.
Number two on the most traded list is, in fact, Chris Paul.
No.
So how about this? Paul and Michael Beasley for Kobe Bryant and Rudy Gay.
I want the Kobe and Gay side, believe it or not. Beasley is he's close to being a sell-high player in that Minnesota is playing at a frenetic pace that I don't know that they're going to be able to maintain all season long. Plus, we've talked about Minnesota being this year's Golden State and that things seem to fluctuate and have the potential to kind of go haywire at any moment there with Coach Kurt Rambis. I'm taking Kobe Bryant, who was a sure thing as long as he can stay healthy. And Rudy Gay has quietly been among the top 10 fantasy producers in all season. Kobe for Paul, I'm taking Kobe just by a hair. And Rudy Gay for Beasley, I'm taking Gay because of his longevity.
All right, Chris Paul and Chris Bosh, who is playing much better lately, for Al Jefferson and Russell Westbrook.
Chris Paul, Chris Bosh for Al Jefferson. So we're going Paul or Jefferson. I'm taking Paul. And the other side of it is Bosh for Westbrook. I'm taking Westbrook.
Why don't we do it like this? Paul for Westbrook. You want who?
I said it earlier in the podcast, so I have to stick by it. Westbrook.
Okay. Well, Westbrook might be a better player in your mind, but is he a better fantasy player? Because Paul gives you the steals.
To this point, he has been.
Okay.
Just by a smidge, and I have to stick by what I said.
So. All right, so then Bosch or Al Jefferson?
Jefferson.
So that means you would definitely rather have the Al Jefferson, Russell Westbrook side rather than Chris Paul and Chris Bosch.
Yes, on both sides of the deal.
Danny Granger, number three on the most traded list. Granger and David Lee for Derrick Rose and Andrew Bynum.
Granger and David Lee for Derrick Rose and Andrew Bynum. I would rather have the Granger and David Lee side because Granger, especially in category leagues, is a more well-rounded player than Andrew Bynum is. Derrick Rose and Granger, I think, are even. And I know Derrick Rose is doing a lot for category league owners, but I think his shooting percentages are very scary. Also, his free throw shooting for a guard is very scary. I think Granger's a more well-rounded rotisserie option. I think David Lee for Andrew Bynum is definitely not even close. David Lee wins by a mile. I think I'd take the Granger side.
All right, Danny Granger, Tyreek Evans, and Al Horford for Gilbert Arenas, Rudy Gay, and Russell Westbrook. Again, that's Granger,
right?
Tyreek Evans, and Al Horford for Gilbert Arenas, Rudy Gay, and Russell Westbrook.
There's my boy Westbrook again. But unfortunately, I think on this side of things, the fact that Gilbert Arenas is there is going to tip the scales on the Granger side because I think Gilbert Arenas is going to take a huge hit in Orlando. What we're seeing him play behind Jameer Nelson, I think he's going to be playing around 20 to 25 minutes per game. So I think if we look at player for player here, Westbrook is better than Granger. Evans, I think Gay is better than Evans, but the Horford for Arena side is not even close. I think that tips the scales
right
on the Granger side.
Number four on the most traded list is Chris Bosh. And as I mentioned, playing much better now than he was earlier. Bosh and Nick Young, whose value is perhaps going to go down soon when John Wall gets, you know, he's back, but
absolutely,
when he starts and gets more minutes. Bosh and Nick Young for Monte Ellis.
Straight. So we could almost count this as Bosch for Monte Ellis straight up. I think Nick Young, like you mentioned, eventually he's going to be a kind of a throwaway in this deal. Monte Ellis, what he's done this year is absolutely insane.
Yeah, come on. You
got
to take Monte Ellis.
You're talking about a player who's shooting the ball 20 to 25 times per game on a regular basis versus a guy, Bosch, who is admittedly taking a huge hit offensively this year in Miami. That's not even close. Monte Ellis.
Yeah, whoever traded Monte, you got fleeced. Sorry, dude. Bosch for Paul Pierce.
Bosch for Paul Pierce is interesting. I think Bosch is on the rise where Paul Pierce is kind of one of those players who can put up solid numbers but is not asked to do a heck of a lot for Boston these days. He's one of those players who, like we're seeing with Rajon Rondo now, if he suffers the most minor bump or bruise, he might miss two or three games or from two or three games turning into 2 weeks. So I wouldn't be surprised if Paul Pierce gets rested down the stretch with Boston having the big picture in mind. I think Chris Bosh is a young player. He's durable. He's proven that he can be a reliable part of the Miami rotation after a slow start. I think Bosh is the better option there.
If you want to send us an email, do so at dmfantasyhoops@cbs.com. DM, D as in Darko, M as in Milicic, fantasyhoops@cbs.com. Follow Sergio on Twitter at CBS Gonzalez. That's GONZALEZ. Here's a question that we got. Sergio, I have to start three of these four forwards this week. Camby, Dang, Caron Butler, Rashard Lewis.
Camby, Dang.
Luol Deng, Caron Butler.
Caron.
And Rashard Lewis.
And he has to start three of the four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely starting Butler. Dallas has five games.
Right.
It's one of the, I believe, only two or three times that happens all season. You have to start him. Luol Deng, I think, is a must-start at this point in the season. So it's really between Camby or Lewis for the last spot. Camby's been banged up. He hasn't been producing much in the scoring department, which he never does, but his rebounding has also been down. But Rashard Lewis, his playing time is too inconsistent. I'm actually going to start Camby here because of what he can potentially offer you in blocks and rebounding.
That's Sergio Gonzalez. I'm Adam Azer. We'll be back on Thursday with another CBSSports.com fantasy basketball podcast. Thanks a lot, everybody, for listening, and have a good one.